Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
What is up, my fellow addicts? Ralph Sutton, the SDR Show. If you didn't hear me talk about it last week, I'm going to say it every week this month. We are leaving SoundCloud, so if you are a fan of the show and you're listening on SoundCloud, it's time to move elsewhere, be it iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, YouTube, wherever you want to listen to the show, you can. Just no longer SoundCloud starting February 1st. So please keep following us and listening to us, but just not on SoundCloud. This week, I tell you, the band is Taking Back Sunday. People love this fucking band. I've been a fan for years. But Mike Feeney and Ian Fidance, two comics that were such massive fans of this band, I felt like I would be doing a disservice to both Adam of Taking Back Sunday and Mike and Ian if I didn't allow them to come on and just shoot questions the entire time because they are manic fans. So I felt that was the best way to handle it. Super cool dude. The band is Taking Back Sunday. Adam Lazara is our guest. Remember, we do this every Wednesday, every Saturday, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, live at GasDigitalNetwork.com. So if you're a Taking Back Sunday fan, you were heard of 5 days ago, commercial-free, or you could watch in HD, or wait 5 days, get commercials, consume it anywhere else. We just want you to listen. But if you do want to support the show directly, go to GasDigitalNetwork.com, use the code SDR, get that 7-day free trial, that 20% off, that access to every episode we've ever done, and 22 other shows. Some great shows launching this month on Gas Digital, including Aaron Berg, a great comedian, and Zach Wilde is taping his first episode, I think, next week. So it's going to be pretty wild. Anyway, here it is right now, the Taking Back Sunday episode of The SDR Show.
This is the intro to the shit show. Sex, drugs, and rock and roll. This is a hit show. Show me a tit show. Please, someone walk the hole. It's beat, I beat. It's hookers and blow. It's art, it's far. You need to know. The SDR Show. Let's go.
It is the SDR Show, sex, drugs, and rock and roll show. And what a doozy of a show we have today. I'm just going to get right into it by telling this quick little story. So there's a band that was going to come on the show. We connect. The connection wasn't so great. The Wi-Fi wasn't so great. And so I said, can we reschedule this for another day? Very gracious enough, the singer decided to say, okay, no problem. I'm in the studio and I'm talking about, I was like, I was supposed to interview this guy and the internet went out and we had to reschedule it. And Ian asks me, well, what band is it? I said, Taking Back Sunday. And he goes, holy shit. Taking Back Sunday, they are like, I can't not be a part of that interview. And then he texts Mike Feeney, and then I start getting, hey, you have room for one more on that interview? So we got Adam Lazar from Taking Back Sunday with two comedians that are super fans. Adam, Ian, Mike, welcome everyone to the show, but really welcome Adam more than everyone else.
Oh, well, I appreciate that. With that intro, I thought maybe you had the wrong guy.
Yeah, very, very possible. I'm going to say this. I know they have a ton of questions, so I will let them say a couple things, of course. But first off, on the top of the show, kudos on the two nights sold out in Starland Ballroom, which is where I go to see concerts all the time. 10th and 11th, right around the corner, sold out. And then today, I listened to this. It's 25 years ago, the Chamberlain album came out, and you did a song on it, and you turned Uniontown into a moody ballady vibe, and I really enjoyed it.
Oh, thank you for listening to that. Yeah, like I was actually really surprised when they reached out. First time I saw them play, they were on tour, and I was living in Greensboro, North Carolina. I saw them at like a house show, and I was just, I've been a huge fan of theirs ever since. And then so when they reached out to me, it's kind of like the same thing I was saying earlier. I was just like, are you sure you have the right email? Yeah, I've gotten to know them a little bit better, and it's a real surreal thing, you know, to have one of your favorite bands like reach out and be like, hey, you want to cover a song? It's like,
and I've been watching your Instagram, and I know that you're on Cameo, and you put out these little like hilarious doodads of things to you saying how on Cameo that really made me laugh. And then I noticed that was when I Googled your name, you came up in Cameo, but in a different way. You are the top 10 best cameo ever on the show Degrassi. the next generation.
Yeah, man. I was sitting around with my roommate Angel, and like we had both kind of like grown up. Like they used to have us watch that show in they used to have us watch that show in health class, like in school. And then Angel and I, we were sitting around one day, and this Degrassi, The Next Generation came on, and we're like, oh my God, we got to watch this. And so after we got a few episodes in, we like Kevin Smith was a guest, and Angel looked at me and goes, man, I bet you guys could be on Degrassi. And then I was like, that'd be awesome. So then we just reached out to them, and they were really open to the idea. And we did an episode.
Were you in any scenes with Drake, or am I in the wrong seasons? Like, was Drake a part of it at that point?
Drake was, yeah, like he was in the wheelchair at that point. But which I read an interview he did not too long ago to where, or I don't know if he did it or somebody else, doesn't matter. But they were just saying like there's a big argument because he didn't want his character to look like weak by being disabled. And then I was like, man, Drake's got problems if he's worried about that. But so he was in that season, but he wasn't in that episode.
No, okay, fair enough. And then also in doing my research as well, your parents must have been real hippie chicks if it's true that your middle name is Burbank.
Right. No, well, it's funny, man. Like it was my grandmother's maiden name, and there was no one left in the family to carry it on. It's my middle name. Now, my mom's not so much a hippie, but my dad, 100%.
It's funny. I am the last Sutton, so my last name is Sutton, but the only other kids that have had family in my generation all had girls. So I've become very aware that the last name dies with me if I don't get a kid out within anytime soon.
Yeah. That's how I am. I'm the last finance, and I love to say the bloodline dies with me.
Makes you sound much more tough. That's true.
Yeah, instead of saying I don't want kids.
Now, Feeney, I know you were one of the ones I brought up that said, holy shit, you're from Long Island as well. I know they're like Long Island heroes. So and not only that, you have the best camera I've ever seen. So I'm going to let you step in a little bit here.
I was thinking I need to really work on my production value over here.
Yeah, I mean, Feeney just made me. I'm going to go spend $2,000 after this and get a goddamn camera.
Well, like a fancy YouTube channel.
Yeah, that's the goal. You can't make money doing stand up comedy anymore. So now we have to become podcasters and TikTokers. So that's what it is.
I'm doing all right on stand up.
Yeah, as long as Attell keeps touring, you know. All right, everybody. We're getting started.
Pretty penny last night, but thank you. Take it away, bitter.
I will say, yeah.
Was that a Dave Attell joke? Or like,
I opened for Dave Attell on the road.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it's awesome. We're in Long Island tonight. Hell yeah. I'll play Take It Back Sunday to bring me on the stage.
That's great.
Nice. There's the Long Island Rock and Roll Hall of Famers there.
Yeah.
I mean, you guys have always been, people say Billy Joel, Long Island. I say poo-poo. No way. Taking Back Sunday. That's it for me.
Thank you for saying it. Man, it's like funny. We like did this. We did this event. I forget where on the island it was, but it was Billy Joel was there. And like we're going through like that press line, whatever. And our buddy Glenn Gamboa kind of held us there so we could meet Billy Joel, which was a crazy thing, but he's there with his little daughter, and he introduced us as real rock and roll guys, and that's how I knew we made it.
that's
awesome.
Yeah, I grew up in Long Island. I mean, I was born in 87, so like you guys hit like everybody from that 99 to 2006 was like right in my high school formative years, so I can't even begin to explain the amount of times that I've not only like that we've said me and my friends have like seen you live and stuff like that, but have just been, you know, screaming the lyrics while driving around parts of Long Island and stuff. So
get over ex-girlfriends and stuff. Like all that
stuff. Oh my God. Over ex-girlfriends. Also like not even being as heartbroken as I wanted to be after listening to the songs, you know, and making it seem like I'm in more pain than I am. You know, like it's just,
yeah.
You guys,
I've been fortunate enough to where I've been getting away with that for some time.
You guys are absolutely responsible for all of my generation's emotions. Well, I mean, dude,
responsibility, man.
A friend of mine couldn't take prom pictures because she got hit in the face in the pit at a Taking Back Sunday show a week before prom. So you've had a deep impact in Delaware, just so you know.
Man, well, thank you guys for all the kind words, man. My head's not going to fit into this.
That's right. Yeah. I'm sure. But with that, based off of what Ian just said, though, one question I have is, do you hold like contempt for the genre name emo? I hated whatever anyone would say. I listen to Take It Back Sunday, they'd be like, oh, they're emo. I would scream, I would defend you guys, because I emo to me was always like Dashboard Confessional and Simple Plan, like those kind of bit. You guys rocked, you know, and you just happened to, you know, you happened to have gone through some shit. But did you take it personally when people would label you guys as emo?
Well, when we were younger, we used to use like that description as a way to like make fun of each other. And then so if you felt someone was being too sensitive or something, you know, you would just say, oh my God, you're being so emo stuff.
Yes.
And like then somewhere along the line, it kind of turned into this thing that people were like claiming, like saying like, I am this. And like, I always just thought we were a rock and roll band. And so my qualm with it is that I worry that being lumped into any category like that, I feel that people, it might cause people to just write us off immediately.
Like, you know, what's funny about that is that I realize there are certain names. Like if a band is labeled punk, I don't think any band gets pissed off about labeled as a punk band. They do if you say hair band, and they do if they say emo band. So it's kind of weird. And maybe grunge was also had a negative. Somehow punk stayed away from having ever getting a negative connotation to it. I don't know why that is.
Well, because I think there's a lot of integrity wrapped up. Like when you think about punk, like there's a, or like when I think about that, like in the terms of like as like a genre, like I think that there's a lot of integrity, like a lot of character in, in that. So whereas with like emo or even like hair, like a hair band, you know, like there's a connotation that goes along with that also, and it's not always associated with like something or like with quality or in integrity or things with that. And then so like my thing going back to your question is just more that I would hate that for because in my, sorry, let me organize my thought. Okay, good. So when I was younger, I wouldn't listen to anything. Like I went through a period of my life where I wouldn't listen to anything unless it was super fast, super loud, very very aggressive, and I missed out on what is now some of my favorite music, you know. And it I would just hate for someone to like have a friend give them one of our records and say, oh, this is an emo band, and then that person look like, I don't want to listen to it.
Right. You know what's funny, I heard you say you never even listened to Zeppelin and the Stones until later in life because you just missed out on that in your life.
No, man, like I didn't get into Led Zeppelin until I was like 23 or 24. And it was because of the tour manager we had at the time. His name's Ward McDonald. He's this giant Australian man. And he has one of the largest vinyl collections I've ever seen, like his whole house. He's just lined with shelves of vinyl. And then so he would bring this portable turntable and he had all these Zeppelin records that we'd have on the bus. And I just remember like walking in one day like, what is this? This is magical. And and he's just like, what do you mean you've never heard of, you know?
Was that your Australian accent, Adam? That was terrible.
no, that was my Ward getting worked up impression, which only probably myself and seven other people will recognize. So but yeah, like I like, I often wonder, you know, that like, had I not been so like, oh, it has to be like punk, bleh, you know, like, had I not been like that, I think I would have not only been a better player at this point in my life, but I also feel like my music vocabulary would be so much more broad, you know, because I would have been, I would have had a larger foundation to build upon.
Well,
that was a lot of words.
No, it's okay. I just have a question because I've read, you know, in terms of like the origin story of Taking Back Sunday, I know there's like, I want to know what it was like for you to move from North Carolina to Long Island to be a bassist of a band that had so much drama and infighting before they ever released a song. And then you had to fill the bassist shoes and then getting convinced to be the lead singer from the bassist. Like, how did all that play out?
Well, there's so like going to shows and doing things like that. And like that whole scene was all, it was all I cared about when I was younger. And it's really all that I'm wrapped up in now. Still, I'm the luckiest guy I know because I can say that. But there was, and so I just wanted to be a part of it so badly. And then at that time, there was kind of this thing going on with like the scene that was happening in North Carolina and the scene that was happening in Long Island. To a lot of the Long Island bands had made friends with the kind of bands from my area. So then when they wanted to play shows out of town, you know, they just go back and forth. And I just thought,
really, there was a connection between North Carolina and Long Island. That seems fucking bizarre to me. Were you the catalyst?
Same thing. No. I was like late to that. Cause like bands like Silent Majority and like Glassjaw and Movie Life, they were coming down and playing in Greensboro and Winston-Salem and North Carolina. And then, so I would be at all those shows. I still know all the words to those songs, you know, and I just thought it was the coolest. So there was one show I was actually going to see, a band from Long Island called Sons of Abraham. They're actually one of my buddies who was singing for them is named Neil Rubenstein, great comedian also. And then so they went to the show, they had canceled, Taking Back Sunday was playing. And my buddy Phil Hanready, who was in a band called Aerotype 11, also from more like Long Island, Brooklyn, he was just there and he was filling in with them on bass. And then so I saw him, you know, and I was like, oh my God, is Aerotype playing? Like, I didn't know you guys were playing. And he's like, no, I'm filling in for my buddy Eddie's band. And then I watched him play. We got to talking after the show, and I just asked. I was like, hey, could I try out for your band? Just because I wanted to be doing something so bad, mm-hmm. you know. And then I moved. I'm so lucky. I have the most wonderful father. I went to Long Island, tried out for the band, came back, and then Eddie called. He's like, hey, we have some shows coming up. If you want to be the bass player, you know, could you make it for these shows? And I flew back to Long Island and then just never went home. So my dad had to go and like move like my few belongings like from this.
Wow, that's nice of your dad.
Gross house that I lived in. Yeah, man, I still apologize to him about that all these years later. I still feel so bad about it. But then I think the first show that I played singing was on New Year's, like Y2K, like 99 into 2000. And it was at our friend Mary Ann's house in the living room with the reunion show. And that was just kind of like our singer at the time, the singer at the time quit. And then I really don't think it was based on skill or talent. It was just that I would throw my body around and people thought that was interesting to watch. So Eddie, you know, at the time was like, you're going to be the singer. And I've been like learning how to sing Trial by Fire since then.
Jeez, what a excellent set of circumstances for the rest of us that got to have that. You know, if you were just the bass player, with, you know, or even doing like the backup vocals, who knows, you know, if the band would have ever taken off.
So let that be a lesson to all you possible singers out there. Just flop around stage. You never know what might happen.
Yeah. Just, yeah, go up there and get as lost as you can, and then because it feels good and people might notice.
That's
Ian,
I felt like you had a few questions.
Go ahead, Ian.
That's what happened with Joy Division. Ian would have seizures on stage because he was epileptic, and everyone was like, "Wow, this guy really loves to dance."
he's
in medical pain.
All right, before we go any further, you know these guys, we've been talking about them for a couple of weeks. I see Jay using them. I see Shannon using them. They are a great way to help you stick with your New Year's resolution to kick smoking cigarettes or quit vaping. They're basically toothpicks that have nicotine. They come in six different awesome flavors, and they help you kick that habit and get that nicotine buzz through their sublingual absorption. It's Zippix Toothpicks, Zippix, toothpicks.com, and they cost less than cigarettes. There's no smell. There's no smoke. There's no worrying about cigarette butts. There's no people saying, oh, you can't smoke in here. Go outside. It's the winter. You don't want to fucking deal with it. Just go to ZippixToothpicks.com, and it will help you kick that smoking habit and move into a healthier 2022. ZippixToothpicks.com. Let's get back into it.
I have a few questions. You know, first of all, I just want to say, how does it feel to have the best Weezer cover ever made? I mean, my name is Jonas. So many bands have covered them. This fucking rips, dude. It's so good.
That, man, thank you. We were in 2019. We were really lucky. Like, we did this giant year of touring. And so, like, then at a certain point, like, when we were at soundcheck, like, our drummer Mark, you know, he's like, can we play anything but one of our songs, please? And then and My Name is Jonas is just like, I can't remember who started playing it first, but everybody just knew it. Like, there was like, we didn't rehearse it, and we almost got all the way through it. It's like that Anchorman thing, like, I'm not even mad, I'm impressed. So they're so then we had a day off. We were in Buffalo, New York, and there's a really great studio there. And so thankfully they had the day open. So we just went and recorded it. And then, like, we weren't really sure what we were going to do with it. We just wanted to have an excuse to go to the studio and then just to kind of document that. And then thankfully, like, there's our buddy Matt Galley has this label called Photo Finish. And they put it out for us. Like, I'm happy that it's out.
I'm going to ask a stupid question, by the way, that I'm sure both Feeney and Ian know the answer to, but where did the name come from? Is it like a, I don't want to go to church thing, I'm taking back Sundays? Like, where did it actually come from?
Well, it depends what answer. Do you want the answer we gave for the first 2 years of the band, or like the real answer?
I'd rather the real answer.
Real.
So, well, Eddie, he grew up going to these matinee shows at CBGB's. Every Sunday, they would have these like hardcore matinee shows. And
they were the best.
Yeah, so like him and his friends, you know, they would like get on the train on Long Island, go into the city, go to these matinee shows, and then come home. And then as they were getting older, and just more like life responsibility, you know, that was happening. Less and less of his friends were able to make the trip with him. Mm-hmm. So I think for him, like, it was a nod to them, you know, to let them know that they were that, or like just how important that time in his life was.
So in a way, it goes back full circle to me and Ian refusing to have children. It works out that way, where Sundays will always be available to us.
Yes.
There you go.
And unless you find to consider.
Did you stop the podcast? You did Talking Back Sunday, but it looked like it stopped about 5-6 months ago. Did you guys bail on that already?
I don't even think we ever really fully committed to it, to be honest. Like, we just, for us, like, we, you know, like, just with how last year was, we were all having, like, just kind of these constant meltdowns and like identity crisis and all that. So like then we just started doing like Zoom calls like this, really just to catch up and to be able to hang out. And then, you know, because like there, like I've never, or like with our drummer Mark, like that's the longest that we hadn't seen each other in person in 20 years.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah. So
it happened with me and my mother. Like, the longest I've gone without seeing my family was 2 years. I didn't see my mother or my brother, like 19 months or something. The longest in my entire life I went without seeing them. It was pretty wild.
Yeah. It's like, and then so just all of like the, or like the emotional kind of turmoil you go through with that. Like, so we just started doing the Zoom calls just to feel connected. And then Sean was like, should we just start recording these? And we just figured, sure. And then, so that's how that happened. And
I got into you guys from a Victory Records sampler.
Samplers were huge, dude.
Those Victory style compilations were amazing. I'm a huge ska guy. Mail Order is fun. All those ska like record label samplers were so important to finding new bands. And I used to go through and look at bands on the thank you list of their albums and go, well, if this band likes them, I'm going to like them. I'll check them out. And that's how I found you guys. Was that like, I'd never heard a sound like you guys before, because Victory Records is a hardcore label and they kind of took a chance on Catch 22 for ska, and they took a chance on you guys for kind of a departure from that sound that the whole label encompassed. Was that like a conscious decision for you guys, or was that the first label that hit you up? Like, was that what you were looking towards going towards a label like that? Or did you feel out of place being involved with bands that didn't really sound like you?
Well, like for the first like bit of us touring, you know, like I was like, we would tour with like hardcore bands, metal bands, pop punk band, like just anything we could get. But so we never really felt out of place with that, because there was that common ground of like the scene, you know. But Victory was the only label that would sign us.
That makes it easier to figure. To figure out who you're gonna go with then, for sure.
It really narrowed our options. We were reaching out to everyone. Like there was. And like Fred from Triple Crown, like he was, we always make the joke that he was gonna pity sign our band. Like he just felt bad for us because no one would give us a chance. So he was just gonna do it because he
felt bad.
It's
the only way I get laid, Adam, is that pity sex. It's like, all right, this guy hasn't got laid in a while. Let's just fucking let him do something. But then
I doubt that that's true. And you shouldn't be talking out loud about yourself that way, man. That has a way of manifesting, you know.
There you go.
So the
well,
third album,
I mean,
though,
Adam, do you have the ability to look at your screen?
Look at Ralph.
The third album was your first major release, and it changed the band so much because, A, I watched a CNN interview with you when that album came out, and I heard a clip of you saying, prior, like not that long ago, that you always felt if a band made it to the radio, you wanted to stop listening to them because you felt that they sold out. Then you became that band. How did that affect you?
Well, I realized how wrong I was, and first off, that CNN thing. So they called me up, and they were like, "Hey, there's a interview at CNN. Can you go to do it?" And I was living in Brooklyn at the time, so I just took the train in, and then I asked, so like, what are we going to be talking about? And they're like, oh, they're just going to talk about the record. And then I got in and they started asking me all these questions about the music industry. And I'm sitting there like, I don't know. I just got here, man. Like, and so it was a pretty nerve-wracking thing.
I just have a couple like true or false things, I guess, from that, because I know from, you know, and a person again, who has seen you live an embarrassing amount of times, I read that you guys tried to make Louder Now more capture your like
live
energy in concert energy. Is that true that you guys set out to do that? Because there does seem to be a more like, you know, it does have a lot. It feels like it has more. It feels closer to going to one of your concerts, I guess. Is that like that raw, like big energy?
That, man, like that is awesome that you said that. Thank you for saying that. That was a real conscious effort. That's one of the reasons we went with Eric Valentine to produce it. Also, because he's just hands down one of the best rock and roll producers there is.
Third Eye Blind, self-titled album. You can't beat it.
Queens of the Stone Age.
Yes, Songs for the Deaf.
On and On, Last Grace Potter record, or the one before that too. But we also wanted to, because even then, like we recognized, like, man, like we're getting lumped in, like, with this certain type of bands, and rather than just the kind of the scene to where we all came from, that just seems to like be getting more narrow and more narrow, you know. So with that record, we just really wanted to try to just really just show people what we could do, and trying to bring some of that feeling from the live show was a big part of that.
Now, this is going to be, I guess, just for me, but I read somewhere that you guys were sharing a room in New York City with The Sleeping when you were writing Louder Now. Is that true?
Yeah. Well, when we were writing Where You Want to Be. There was a rehearsal, like a build. It's like still there. And then, because we were there actually like maybe like two years ago, we went, our buddy Sam has a place over, like a room over there. But yeah, like it's in Lindenhurst, like right by this giant graveyard. And it's just like all these industrial buildings. And then they went in and just kind of made rehearsal spaces, you know, just rooms. And we split a room with The Sleeping at that time. And then 3 years Older was right next door.
Well, because I'm my best friend that I grew up with, his cousin is Joe Zizzo, the drummer of The Sleeping. Oh. So I always
Dream Book.
So and now they're just doing a reuniting tour thing, which is going to be crazy in Irving Plaza. But yeah, it was exciting to see that.
We had a lot of fun. Whole lot of fun with those guys.
All right, before we go any further, you know these guys so well. They've been sponsoring not only the show but Skankfest. They sponsor Lewis's fight thing, and they're just a really cool company. It is called Yo Kratom. They are home of the $60 kilo, which I've said a million times. If you're not a fan of Kratom, don't even fucking listen to this ad. Who cares? But if you do like Kratom, there is no better source than YoKratom.com. You go to YoKratom.com, you get a $60 kilo. You can't beat that price. It's going to be a wholesale, direct to you, curated quality kratom to your doorstep for just $60. No more wondering how long it's been sitting at the gas station or what kind of crap you're getting. You know now, if you go to YoKratom.com, you spend $60 on that kilo and it comes direct to you. They have custom blends. They have everything you're looking for all your kratom needs at YoKratom.com. YoKratom.com, home of the $60 kilo. All right, let's get back into it.
Let me ask you this, Adam. So you know, the blow up time for this band, 2002 through, you know, the first 10 years of the band or so, there was no social media.
Yeah.
You are also caught the tail end of bands can actually make money, big money, because record labels were a thing and record labels could really help promote a band and people weren't streaming everything. How different do you think your path would have been if you're starting today? Because you have to embrace social media. You have to do everything yourself. You know, it must have been you feel fortunate that you started when a band could make it as just being a good band.
Yeah, I don't really know. And we've had conversations along these same lines, you know, just trying to figure out like, how would have we navigated that? But then it's just hard to say, but it's like kind of one of those things. So like, I'm really glad that I'm not like a teenager now. Because like being a teenager mm-hmm. now would have to like navigate social media would just
nightmare.
Seems like seems like the worst. So I would think in a way, I think one of the things that makes us very fortunate is that I don't feel like any of us in the band like feel beholden to like Twitter or Instagram or anything like that. And a lot of times when I go on there and check stuff, you can tell that a lot of people do feel that way, and that can't be a good feeling. No. So I'm glad that it happened for us in the time frame it did. But it's also interesting you mention that, man, because if like a record budget from like 2001 compared to a record budget now is just night and day. It's pure insanity. That, and then like, man, like everyone one was posting like these Spotify end of year, you know, like like this band had X amount of streams, but and then like you're just thinking like, man, 80 million streams, and that like it translates to like nothing.
Right. Like, imagine if it was, if yeah. it was 80, if it was 80 million sales, it'd be a whole different story.
It's just clout. It's just clout.
But now they're also Spotify's actively removing comedian stand-up albums. So like, because they don't want to pay out the back owed royalties, because stand-up was never looked as a copyright holder. They were looked as, we just got royalties for being an artist. They didn't realize there was all this other money we were supposed to get. So now rather than pay us, they're just removing all of our albums.
You know what
Spotify.
I heard, by the way, that was amazing? Some band, and I forget the name of them, they released an album that was just silence.
Yes.
And they encouraged everyone to play it, and they made like enough money to tour. What was
it? They made $25,000 off Spotify, and I'm thinking about making a cover album of that album and releasing it to make some money.
Wait, which band was it?
It's some indie band. I don't know the name, but it's read about it.
Cliff or something?
No, they're called Wolfpack.
Wolfpack, yes.
Corey Wong is now like, he put out a solo record not too long ago, but it's those guys, which if you're into like a real intricate kind of mathy music, that is your band. They are, it's I'll like put that on when I want a bit of a challenge. And
nice.
So, but those guys are all, they're incredible. And that was absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
But it's crazy to me that they're pulling the comedy records. Cause if you think about like how many subscribers does Spotify have and how much are they charging those subscribers per month? And then like, it's just such like I think it's like a glaring example of like how much like stuff like that, like there's all this gray area and it's just still so much the Wild West. Nobody's figured it out yet.
It's brutal.
All right, before we go any further, if you haven't done so in a while, why not go over to podcastmerch.com/SDR and pick yourself up a shirt, a t-shirt, a hoodie, something that sports that swagger of the SDR show. We got some new shirts coming out as well, but it's worth it. Just go take a gander, take a gaze, take a look at podcastmerch.com/SDR. And there's a bunch of other podcasts on there as well. But time to start sporting your SDR, your sex, drugs, and rock and roll. All right, let's get back into it.
I have too many things that I'll never end up getting to, but
try and bang them out, Feeney. I'm going to shut up and you bang them out.
Rapid fire. Here we go. I read that you recorded Tell All Your Friends in just 2 weeks. And is it true that the band showed up to record the album to the studio without a drum set, assuming that the studio would provide one?
Yes.
Yeah.
We had no idea. It was our first time in an actual studio. And then, I just remember them being perplexed and just beside themselves that we didn't bring, like, I think we brought like 2 or 3 guitars. and then like Sean brought his bass, you know, like we just didn't know.
Why don't we go back and forth? Ian, question, go.
I don't know, man. I mean, with so much music that came out from not just you guys, but the entire scene you were surrounded in, I can't imagine how much that, I mean, did that influence you to feel like you had to put out more records, had to tour harder, or is that just something that was a coincidence with the fact that you guys wanted to do all that? I mean, like, there were definitely, like, kings and princes of the Long Island, you know, punk scene, and it always seemed like you guys were, like, on top of each other with releases.
Yeah, there's, like, I think for us, you know, like, there was a lot of pressure that we put on ourselves to like write and like keep moving, stay on the road, to whereas now I just think there's it's a bit different because of like what we were talking about, like with social media and it's like that, like now there's this pressure from everyone on the outside, like more content, more, which you guys probably experience that also.
Totally,
like,
yeah.
Well, for me,
yeah,
they all say less content, but for these guys, yes, more content.
Yeah, Ralph's a real audio-only content guy.
Yeah.
Feeny, your next question. Go. I want to get to as many of them as possible.
Okay, okay. You guys, so you guys do your intertwining vocals. That's kind of like one of your signature sounds, and I think you've excelled at that more than any band I've ever seen do it. I mean, that's what was always made it so awesome, listening to your guys' music. Do you do lyrics first and then music, or music first and you write the lyrics around that?
It just depends on the song. A lot of times, like there will be like just kind of like a line, and then once an idea comes together, musically we'll just kind of build around that line. And John is an amazing writer, and then so it's really awesome to be able to bounce ideas off of him and vice versa.
Great.
How about this? I read somewhere, it was a couple of years ago, that you guys said you refuse to ever dye your hair. None of you will ever dye your hair. Are you still holding true to that?
Yeah, well, clearly not. But there's like, no, like we meant like a, it was more of like a age gracefully type thing. Like we meant like don't like just for men, your hair. Like clearly with my hair being dyed blonde, I'm not trying to do it and then go around and tell people like, yeah, this is just me. This is my natural. It's one of those things, you know, because you see some of like our rock and roll heroes, they look kind of like grandma now. And then because you could tell they're like just holding on so hard to this like a certain age that they were, rather than just kind of rejoicing into the place to where they've made it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you have maybe one of the coolest like frontman signature moves, because I feel like every singer has to have one. And you have that thing where Ralph, if you never see it, he swings the microphone cord and it goes around and like a tether, and then you end up catching it and being able to sing it. How many times did you either choke yourself or smack yourself in the face with the microphone before you were able to nail that?
Countless. I've knocked teeth out. I knocked our old bass player Matt out cold once. I still feel terrible about it. Like we were playing this festival in the UK called Give It a Name, and I'll never forget. Like I like started walking down stage, and I just toss it around my neck, and then I hear like. And I feel the line just go slack, and I'm just thinking, oh no. And then I turn around and there's Matt just on his back out. And then he's such a trooper though. Like they took him off stage for a minute, bandaged his head. He came up and was like leaning on the drum riser, finished the set, and then went to the hospital and had to get.
Wow. That's rock and roll as fuck.
God damn. I love that. Yeah,
that is
not awesome at the time, kind of a cool story now.
Yeah.
That's great. That's like Chris Novoselic getting hit with his own bass and getting knocked out.
That was awesome.
Or like, I tossed it up.
He threw it so high. It was Ian, you have one?
I have to ask, what's it feel like to be a ghost?
I see what you did there. I see what you did. What happened was we were in a bit of a, I was in an argument with someone that I had like a friendship, kind of like business relationship with. And I remember going out one night, just having way too much to drink, and then leaving these messages on his machine, asking him what it felt like to be a ghost, and being so embarrassed about it the next day. And then I told my buddy about it. He's like, man, you should name a song that. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to make it the chorus of the first song of the record. There you go.
That rules.
Yeah.
That's great. I feel like like your lyrics are iconic. I mean, I can't tell you how many of us used them as away messages on AIM when we were younger.
Dude. I used to see how people's relationships were doing. Like, I remember my best friend's was the line from Ghostman on Third, that you could slit my throat and with my one last dying wish, I'd apologize for bleeding on your shirt. And I remember talking to girls in my high school that were like, he's so romantic and dreamy to make that his thing.
We used to have a joke that was like, you'd apologize for bleeding on my shirt. I would say, why did you slash my throat? Like, that was like our joke.
Yeah.
Why would you hurt me? Yeah. I mean, like, those lyrics are so iconic and incredible. And I noticed on, like, your self-titled album, the lyrics kind of departed into this, like, very real, mature type, like, very, I don't know how much of that was biographical, but it really took a turn into this, like, whoa, that is some deep, dark. It just seemed like it was so much more below the surface than what things had been before. And was that something that you noticed in your songwriting? Like, after years, you kind of got, like, more, way more personal and deeper, or what? Was there, like, a specific instance that that album was based on?
Well, it's there more for us. I just think it's because, you know, like, or like, just because we had grown and had more life, more life experience at that point. You know, like, the person you are when you're 18 is very different than the person you are when you're 28. So and that's actually one of the things, like, I'm kind of, like, most proud of, like, with the band and through everything, is just that I feel that, like, the people that have led us into their world, you know, like, they like, I feel like we've all grown up together, you know, like, and because it, and, like, that's something that I hope we can continue to experience. But to answer your question, it's just, like, not, like, you have a whole different set of problems, you know, when you're a grown ass man.
Right, you know? Right. Yeah, but I mean, like, to be able to break through that and write about it is great, because a lot of bands don't. Like, a lot of bands are around for 20 years and they don't evolve, and they're singing about the same things, or they're trying to replicate what they did that made them big to begin with, and it sucks. And you guys have evolved in, like, lyrically, sonically, and everything. It's really, really great, man.
Thank you, man. That's a really huge compliment, and I appreciate you saying that. Thank you.
Let me ask you this, because you're so on your Instagram, so forward with your cameo. What's the craziest cameo request you've gotten so far, and have you said no to anything that was too weird?
I haven't said no to anything, and you know what, there haven't been too many things that are out of the ordinary. They have, like, this roast feature, and then there's been a few to where, like, it'll be like one friend getting it for another friend, and they'll just say a bunch of, like, they'll just write a bunch of horrible shit that they want me to say to their friend who's a stranger. And I try to approach the cameo thing, like, in the way that I guess, like, Roger Miller would do it, or, like, in my mind. And then so like, I have a guitar, and, like, I'm picking on that to make me feel less awkward. And then, so, like, in those circumstances, I don't say no. I just kind of try to figure out a way to make it
your own.
Yeah, and make it not as, like,
offensive.
Brutal. Yeah.
Well, let me ask you, so since you guys started the first record, it's 2002, pretty much every 2 or 3 years an album comes out. Last one was Tidal Wave, but then in 2019 was 20. The compilation record had 2 new songs on it. But technically now, the longest distance ever, obviously where there was the pandemic, how close are you to the 8th album?
Very close. We've been there's, because we were, like, our plan for 2020 after 2019, you know, like, because we were so busy in 2019 with touring, that our plan for the majority of 2020 was to get together and write, and clearly we couldn't do that. So then we were just waiting till it was safe, because we all live in different places now. And so, but we've done a handful of writing trips now, and I would just say there's just maybe a few more that we need, and we'll be good to go.
All right, Feeney or Ian, you both get one more question each, and then we got to do the verse.
Okay. This is just going to be for me in terms of the, so, you know, Bamboozle, Warped Tour, all of those things, like, growing up for us was like, it was marked on the calendar, like, that start of the year. Like, that was like, we had to make sure we went to that. And now, you know, having done comedy for a while and doing comedy festivals, for us as comedians, like, the worst part of doing comedy festivals are the actual shows. Like, they're not that they're bad, but we want to get it over with so we can go back. Because the best part of comedy festivals is the hang, because you're with a lot of very funny people. Yeah, everyone right. wants to hang out and do that. So whenever we have to go on stage, we're like, ah, shit. All right, I'll be right back. Just stay here. Is that how it is with you guys with bands, or because it's like Warped Tour and Bamboozle and on such a bigger stage, you're like, I don't give a shit. No one's making money. Let's just go have fun. Or do you want to hang out with the bands more?
I would say hanging out with the other bands is awesome. But every kind of festival like that or just show like that is an opportunity, you know, to maybe show some people what you're capable of. And like that wouldn't typically just go to one of your shows, you know. And then so that's how we always kind of try to approach that.
Probably explains why you're where you are and where I am where I am.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you probably shouldn't dread doing shows. Ian, your last question?
No, I mean, I don't know. This has been awesome. I've done so many different things in comedy, and I told my friends that I was talking to Adam from Taking Back Sunday today, and this was the most impressed with me they've been. So, you know, I'm just grateful to be here, man. And
What about this? Is there any band or that you used to tour with that you hated touring with, or any sort of like war story where you're like, this fucking band did this thing, like some sort of like,
probably Brand New.
The band that shall not be named.
Nah, man, they were the tour we did with them was awesome. We had a whole lot of fun. And I don't hate this band, but I was really mad at Against Me for a long time, because we played Skate and Surf one year, and they like the dressing rooms were this one area of the building, and then like the door was kind of like this big industrial kind of sliding door. And they chained a deadbolt and locked the door with a deadbolt. So we like couldn't get out, and we were late to make it to the stage. And they were doing it as a joke, which I get. But what made me upset was like, I had never met them. So I was just like this would be funny if we were friends, but I don't know you, man. Like, we've since talked about it. And it's one of those wasn't funny then, super funny now kind of situation.
Yeah, yeah.
Like you knocking your bass player out. So now what about this? You're so deeply ensconced in rock. Every interview I hear you talking about every rock band, like how much, you know, grunge affected you and rock and roll. Are there artists that you listen to that people be like shocked that you're a big fan of? Like you listen to Taylor Swift, or you listen to, I don't know, Milli Vanilli, something that like people are like, wow, I can't believe that Adam is into that.
Oh no, I love all kinds of music. I really love classic country music. I love Michael Jackson, and I know that's like a weird like thing where there's just the part, you know, that you try not to think about.
Yeah,
and because like for me, like the like when Dangerous came out, like I went from Dangerous to Nirvana, Nevermind, and then like the like
wow.
That was my entire world where those
yeah.
And who knew his title? He was trying to warn children about himself with the title of that album. Yeah. So let's do the first
hey,
right
man,
now, Shannon.
Michael Jackson's great, or as I like to call him, never done a thing wrong, Michael Jackson.
The first time ever I saw concert Detroit had sex.
All right, the name of the show is the SDR Show, Sex, Drugs, and Rock. And roll show. We ask every artist this since the dawn of time. We ask you about your first experience with all three, starting with rock and roll, which is the first concert you went to, ideally on your own volition, and ideally someone we're going to know and not some local band no one's ever heard of.
Well, my first show was a local band, but the first like big like giant production, like in like an outdoor shed, you know, like it was Jimmy Buffett with my high school girlfriend's family.
And you went as a favor, or you went because you wanted to go?
I went because I'd never been to anything like it before, and I had to see what it was all about.
Was it in North Carolina?
Yes. It was in Greensboro, North Carolina.
That's cool. Okay, now the first drug you ever did after weed, unless weed wasn't your first drug, or if weed was the only hardest drug you've ever done.
Well, does booze count? Because there.
I mean, it counts, but if there's anything after weed, unless booze is the only thing you've ever done, you know?
I just remember there was this one time, like, there, my buddy Josh, like, I just moved across town with my dad, and then my buddy Josh's older sister had just gotten married, and, like, her husband, the guy that he married, was, like, real cool stoner kind of guy, and Josh would fill up these Mountain Dew bottles, which is straight vodka. Anyway, so, like, he, like, goes and drives over and picks me up. We end up going to, like, a Kmart or something like that, small town, nothing else to do, and just getting hammered. And then, like, I get back home, and my dad knew, like, just knew, you know, like, I was probably just sweating out of my pores, and he like didn't say anything about it that night. But the next morning he woke me up super early, and didn't even really, like, didn't even mention it, or, like, just he knew, or, like, I knew that he knew. And it and I've never felt so awful and guilty all at the same time. Like, he was taking all of the Catholic guilt that he could muster and like Street Fighter, you know, I drove it, like, just red.
How old were you?
So that I was probably 14.
Okay, so a little bit young.
And then I didn't drink for a long time after that.
And the first time you had sex?
Waiting. I'm still hoping that
that's impressive. You have three kids. If you're still waiting, that's impressive.
Science. I thought the whole, like, singer for a rock band thing would work out better for me in that department. but one day, you know, one day I'm just keeping my fingers crossed with that one.
All right, fair enough. Ralph, I
have to ask one more thing, and I'm sorry, and then I apologize to it, because I have, when you guys did a show in Albany, it, like, I think it was you, Under Oath, Armor for Sleep, I think it was, way back in, when, like, Louder Now was coming, something around there. We drove all the way from Suffolk County, Long Island, up there, and I bought what, to this day, I still talk about, is the most comfortable shirt I've ever worn in my life, and it's this... It's this shirt. Yeah. Okay. And first off, I want to know what this material is, because I need every one of my shirts to be it. But also, I just wore this in Jamaica this year, and I might have been imbibing in some marijuana, and a cherry burned a hole through it, and now it's officially over. But it's still, like, I'm gonna keep this just as a memento of, this is the softest shirt I've ever had in my life, and no other band shirts made good shirts back in the day. They'd always shrink and feel thick and not breathable. This was the best. So,
translation, Adam, do you have extras of those, and can you send it to Mike?
We do not. I have not seen that in a real long time. I want to say, first off, the fact that you can still fit into a shirt that you got that long ago, keep up the good work, man. I don't know the company. That's above my pay grade, but I do have a number I can call about that. So
incredible.
Follow Adam. The band obviously doesn't need much plugging, but at Taking Back Sunday, your Instagram is at Adam Damn Light Laser. It's a hard to say, but it's Adam and then Damn. Then your last name, but kind of using only one D. And then obviously the two sold out shows in New Jersey, but there's a bunch of dates on the website, on the Facebook page. Anything else you want to plug before we go around the room doing plugs?
I would just like to say thank you guys for taking the time. Thank you for having me on your show. And thank you to over there for just all your kind words, man.
We'll go around the room. Feeney, your plugs?
MikeFeeneyComedy.com for dates. I'm all over. Got dates all over. You want to do that? YouTube.com/MikeFeeneyComedy to watch my special Rage Against the Routine. And thank you, Adam, for all of the, for affecting my adolescence more than I feel like you could have imagined. And I got to come see you guys live again, because it's been some years.
Ian, your plugs?
iAnimal69 on Instagram, Twitter, and Twitch. This weekend, I'm with Dave Attell at Governor's in Long Island. Next weekend, Wilkes-Barre, Wisecrackers, Bye Guys podcast every Thursday, 11 a.m., and Sopranos Prima Volta with me and Sam Roberts on YouTube.com/NotSam. And I'm going to be opening up for the Pie Tasters, Kill Lincoln, and Cat Bite December 26th, 9:30 Club, D.C. Come check it out. Thank you. This was awesome, man. Adam, you're a king, dude. Thank you so much.
Shannon, your plugs?
Follow me on Instagram at ShannonLee6982. I listen to my podcast, The Thing Is Ding. We talk about bad dates, fighting, and ghosts.
Okay, great. And Adam, we're just going to ask this quick because we ask everybody this as to whether or not our guest believes in ghosts. Don't give any indication. I'm going to say yes. Feeny, you say yes or no?
I'm going to say yes. I think he does.
Ian?
I'm going to say yes because he knows what it feels like to be a ghost.
Shannon?
Yes, yeah. I say yes.
And then yes. Adam, do you believe in ghosts?
I just have to say, I believe in the ghost shows with the real ripped guy, tight t-shirt, gelled hair. That's what I believe in.
Okay. Yes. Zach Baggins. He's the worst.
Right, follow me everywhere at I Am Ralph Sutton. My other podcast on health and wellness comes out every Monday called The Good Sugar Podcast. I want to say this, Adam. I've watched a bunch of your interviews, and in every interview, you say this, that you're the luckiest guy in the world, and you seem really content and happy with where you are. So kudos to you on that. What I fell in love with is the Punk Goes Acoustic cover of your song that you did, A Decade Under the Influence. Walking around saying I got a bad feeling about this to the point where I think Shannon wants to kill me. So we're going to play that on our playlist, thestrshow.com/playlist. Thank you, dude, so much for taking the time out, and we'll see everyone next time on The SDR Show. Peace.
You've been listening to The SDR Show.